This is the regular meeting of the Improvements Committee of Rancho Murrieta Community Services District of September 1st, 2020. The first order of work on the agenda is comments from the public. Do we have any public comments this morning?
Welcome, Martin.
Great. No comments. I'm trying to do this on my computer instead of my iPad, and so it looks like I got it going. Thanks.
I think you're doing it.
Yeah.
Issues, Martin.
Issues. Okay.
Next item on the agenda is to review the monthly updates. Paul.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Hopefully you can hear me well enough. I'll just jump right into it. So as an item of note, we had an issue with a lightning strike that caused us to lose our SCADA system and our tank levels. And so luckily one of our staff members just happened to be awake in the wee hours of the morning and saw this issue, called me, and we worked to resolve it. Luckily we've got a excellent chief plant operator who's diligent enough to check on things. And you know, we were able to resolve it. And it was on our biggest irrigation day, which is Monday. And so you got the facility back up and running, and we checked the system and brought in our electrician to see what was going on. And it looked like some fuses had gotten shorted out. And it was just an anomaly at the water plant that this happened, because in times past, when we lose power, generators would come on and the plant would just come right back on. So we're working with our vendor that set up the SCADA system to create a solution that we are alerted should this ever happen again, as well as at our tanks. So we're working on that right now. And then Tom had a solution as it related to internet capability there, if anything was lost with that, to work with our internet, or not internet provider, but our IT service provider to have a constant pinging system. And if that pinging was lost, which means it's constantly sending a signal, and if that signal is lost over a certain period of time, that you receive a call for that. So that would be another solution to that as well. So just to let you know, we were working on that, or continue to work on that. And then moving on into district projects, with the water rights renewal, an update to the packet is we've got the packet put together and signatures, and are sending it back to our consultant to deliver to the Department of Water Resources. So the petition is complete and should be in the process. And for the recycled water fee study, that's again on hold. The chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite conversion, that's starting back up right now. Utility staff, that is the primary staff that's focused on putting in the piping for the systems, has been very busy with multiple water leaks in the system and drainage issues. And so they'll be getting back to that this week as time permits as well. As well as our electrical vendors continuing to run conduit and connections for the systems out there. On the dam inundation mapping and emergency action plans, so for Marty, just a heads up, this is a kind of long-going project that was a result of the failures at the Oroville Dam. The State Department of Water Resources Division of Safety of Dams, after Oroville, wanted everybody to go through and make sure that every dam has flood mapping below it and that you have emergency action plans to deal with communications and operations should there be issues and imminent failures. And so continuing on in this process, we've already submitted all the inundation maps for the dams that we had to, and are continuing to work on the emergency action plans for our high hazard dams. Dams are listed as varying degrees of hazards. For the high hazard ones like Calero, we've already sent those in. And the only one that's pending right now is for Michigan Bar Dam. So at our wastewater facility, what looks like a levee there containing our secondary wastewater storage is actually a dam that's regulated by the state. So that's the only one that's pending, and consultants working on that. Consultant had a lot of turnover, and so they're taking a bit of time to get that information back to us. Moving on to the 6B sewer lift station, PLC and backpan replacement. So a PLC is a programmable logic controller. That is the computer that operates the facility based on various logic in the system. And it was discovered that there was issues with the panel and then later discovered that the panel hadn't been designed to deal with certain safety concerns. So we did a complete replacement of the basically interior guts of the panel, which is the back pan that holds all the electrical components and equipment. And so that project, the panel is built. The vendor was out yesterday to look at the site to see what they could do to get a quick turnaround for installation of the new components while keeping the existing system in operation. And so he worked with our chief operator to devise a plan, and they're basically going to just hardwire in some toggle switches to run the pumps while they do the panel swap over. And so that way we can continue to pump sewage and don't have to bring in a contract pumping service to pump sewage while this gets replaced. So that's good. And hopefully that'll get replaced next week. Somebody have a question? Okay, no question. So moving on to development projects for the retreats east and north. There's no update as it relates to district work on that. With the Rancho Murrieta North, there's really no update as it relates to district information there as well. On the Highway 16 offsite improvements, still working on the encroachment agreement. I believe that's another item in the packet. And pretty much for most of the projects, just no updates, except moving on to Lot 11. And Lot 11 would be as if you're pulling in the new roadway off of Highway 16 towards the Bel Air, you know, to the new Cahav homes. The lot on your right-hand side is slated to be a Circle K gas station car wash. I think they even want to have a Subway in there as well. So the plan sets have been reviewed by Coastland with comments provided back. And so that project looks like it's moving forward as well. And I believe Tom has had discussions with the lot owner just to explain the process of review and deposits needed for it. And I believe he also has his deposit up to date as it relates to monies needed for our review on that. On the FAA Business Park, they're continuing to build the buildings there. And an update since I wrote the packet update here is that they will be looking for getting water service soon, as it was assumed. So they're nearing completion. And so once water service, you know, they request water service, they'll come in and request permits for that. And then we'll go through the process with them on that. On the residences of Murrieta Hills East, still really no update on it. From last discussions, it looks like Mr. Kyle would have to submit an application to proceed any further with the district. So Tom and our district council has spent a substantial amount of time, I believe, providing information for him without having a deposit in place, just to cordially deal with any questions he had, as well as Mark Martin was working on that prior to his retirement as well. So any questions on development or those items?
Paul?
Yes, sir.
John, mm-hmm. You were reviewing, or you guys got Coastland reviewing Riverview. And off of Murrieta South Parkway, between lots 21 and 95, based on the map that I'm looking at, there's a street that's not inside the subdivision, but it goes through the country club between the 8th green and the 9th tee. Could we get a grading plan just for that area and how they're projecting the improvements for that street? So we can see by plan what the conflicts are. They've staked the property out there and there's some conflict areas that they need to resolve, but it would be helpful if we had a grading plan to know how the elevations are between 8 and 9 and what they need to do improvement wise in the street. My understanding is there's at least a 10-inch water line that's in that street, but I don't know about dry utilities or anything else. And it would be helpful if we could look at that, you know, area of the plan set. We just need between lot 21 and 95 and that area east of it that stubs into the existing stub street off Murrieta South Parkway.
Yep. Yep, and that street's going to be called Karsten Drive. There's that little stub off the South Parkway that, in that area you noted. So I can request that if you would like, do you want that sent to yourself? Because I could just have the Riverview folks get in contact with you and provide you with whatever you need. Maybe you could even
do
that.
I'd like it sent to Baker Williams so that he can print it out for me in a big sheet that I have trouble reading these little tiny plans to get the detail. I can't see the footages on these small plans, so it'd be nice to get a big, if you could send it to Baker Williams, I could get it printed in a big format.
All right, I'll have the Riverview engineers forward that along, or I'll request that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Paul, can right, I Paul? Interject yes. real quick? This is Amelia, and I wanted to say that if everybody would kindly raise your hand if you have a question, that way I can unmute you when your hand is raised, and I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody now, except you, Paul.
Okay, and just a heads up for folks that are new to this. So when you're on Zoom, at the bottom of your screen, you have an item there that's called Participants. If you click on that, a box pops up. And at the bottom right-hand corner of that box, you can click raise hand, and that'll show your hand raised, and then click to lower it. And then again, in that same area, you can turn on your camera or mute yourself or, you know, unmute yourself if Amelia, actually, I think Amelia has control that she can mute and unmute you. And generally, we leave the cameras closed off so it doesn't utilize too much bandwidth and cause distractions. So, all right, so continuing on with the updates, Amelia, it looked like you went to your email. You gotta go back to the packet, please. All right, so scrolling down to the further updates, Laguna Joaquin.
Paul, just quickly, back on Riverview, just to be clear, the only thing we're checking is their grading plan, right? So these utility conflicts that are a question, we don't have any drawings showing what their plan is as far as utilities yet. Is that not correct?
Only thing as it relates to water, sewer, and drainage, that's within the purview of the district, and that's what we received. I don't have anything as it relates to like power or telecommunications or anything like that. That's why I would put Mr. Sullivan in contact with their engineer so that they could directly coordinate on any information needed. Your You're correct.
But as far as what, as far as CSD and what we're checking, what Coastland is checking for us right now, it's just the grading plan. It's not, we're not looking at utilities or street work yet, right?
No, we never look at street work. It's not.
Well, I mean, we're not. We haven't gotten anything on the utilities yet. We're looking at the grading plans.
We have. We've received it on the drainage. So drainage plans, been reviewed. Received a sewer study, which is under review as well. That came a little bit later, so that's why that review isn't complete as of yet. So. This is all just utilities as it relates to that section in, that I had circled in the last board packet. It's a lower section down by Reynosa Drive that they're looking to develop first.
Okay, so what we've been talking about was they were going to turn in their grading plans and we were going to do that work for the county. Now you're telling me that they've also turned in some sewer plans for the first phase of their work, and we're also, have we put ourselves in the county's position as to plan check on those also?
Well, those would be within our purview anyways. So we just did the grading as it relates to the project ahead of time, and then that, even so, we've done that review, that's still going to go to the county as well, just to help expedite that process so they can move forward on grading.
Okay, I understand. Laguna Joaquin update.
All right, so moving forward with that. So luckily there's still water in the Cosumnes River, which is a very important factor for Laguna Joaquin and the local ranches around us. And so a portion of that water is continuing to be routed into Laguna Joaquin, which is keeping its level up, which is good. It's about 2 inches from the spillway and it has held there for about the past several days. And further flows are all going to the Anderson Ranch for their needs. And as it relates to the midge flag treatment there, so Tom has authorized that we're allowed to do additional midge fly treatments. So we're going above and beyond what we typically do in a season. And we're going to continue to do even more midge fly treatments that we have in the past. We're getting a lot of complaints that it's the worst ever. And, you know, it's pretty bad out there for sure. But what we're doing is additional midge fly treatments using the product that's recommended for it. We even had Sacramento YOLO Vector Control District out, which Tom coordinated. And so Tom and I had a discussion with them and went around and looked at the basin. And we are using the product at the maximum label rate of the product and are doing it. Now applying it with the minimum application period time, which is 2 weeks. So legally you can't just dump as much of the product as you want in there. You have to do it within the label rate of the product. And that, again, that's 2 weeks. So we did our fifth treatment a little while ago, and we're gonna do our sixth treatment this Friday. And we'll be utilizing a contractor to apply the product this Friday as our equipment had failed on us. So our boat motor and our chemical feed pump quit during the last round of application. So that's why we're bringing out a vendor to do this work. And it's a vendor we had utilized in years past. So going back to the discussions we had with the Sac YOLO Vector Control District. There were folks I had met with years ago when we had a ad hoc committee meeting to discuss what we could do with this. And they again reiterated that the Sac YOLO Vector Control District will not do anything as it relates to non-biting midge flies, as they are not a vector, which means they are not a disease-carrying organism of concern for them. You know, I tried to convey that there's also, you know, gnats and other things that come out of there, and They said, yes, they have someone out here who monitors all the bodies of water in the community. And at this point, there's nothing of concern to them in that basin, but they did offer up a variety of solutions and ideas. And some of those included drawing down the reservoir. They said that would probably be the best and cheapest alternative to dealing with the midge flies there, so that the sides and the banks would dry out and kill the midges where they live. And then even in wintertime, if it was still low enough and there was any frosts, that would kill them as well, because the larvae live in the mud of the reservoir. But then again, you'd have to fill that up after season. Right now, it would not be a practical thing to do because water is precious until the time it rains again. So you want to hold on to any bit of water you have, because the RMA irrigates out of it. And it's also a place where regulatory storage could be held for the ranch downstream as well. Excuse me. So, and then they also suggested that we put up some bright lights in areas away from where people live to draw the midge flies away from the reservoir, or not the reservoir, from the basin. And then they suggested that we also put out some sort of trapping system to monitor the levels of the midge flies out there. We inquired if they could do that for us. And again, they said, unfortunately, no. It's very time consuming for their staff to do so and expensive. And so that would fall to us. And so we're looking at systems to potentially utilize to do that. So the only thing I could see were some small systems in my research on that so far. And I know in times past, I'd bought sticky traps and placed them around, and they were just inundated with, when I did that in the past, these sticky traps that had like a grid system on it that you could count the amount of critters per square inch on it, were just covered with everything under the sun that weren't just midge flies. There were gnats and damselflies and beetles and all kinds of other things. So it's not just midge flies that hatch out of that as well. And another thing too is they were very adamant too that, yeah, midge flies are just a natural organism. So even if you completely drained and got rid of everything and excavated and dredged the reservoir or the basin there, that they're just going to come back as well. So, but they highly suggested that getting in there and dredging it and making it deeper should help, because our areas that we do have deeper reservoirs in, that's not as much of an issue. And for example, at our wastewater treatment plant, we've got acres and acres of ponds, and we don't have as much of an issue as Laguna Joaquin does, because Laguna Joaquin is very shallow. It warms up very quickly. And it's just got a very silty bottom as well. So that's why they were suggesting, yeah, really work to dredge it. And as it relates to dredging, Tom had looked into potentially coordinating with the local landfill to put that dredge material on their garbage for cover material. So he's working on that avenue with that. Because an issue with any drainage detention basin is that once you start removing material from it, it's considered hazardous material. And so that can become very expensive if you try to remove it and have a place to put it at. So, and it, within the packet as well, I tried to convey that this has just been an ongoing issue. You can see from this memo from Lee Lawrence, who's my predecessor from a long time ago. He had some ideas that are still valid ideas from how to deal with the system. So, scrolling down, Amelia, there's fountains in there that helps oxygenate it, which is good, dig it deeper, which has always been a wish for everybody, but tremendously expensive and a cost that no one has wanted to incur. There's also, you know, trying to filter water going to the lake. Our last ad hoc committee meetings, that was one of the big solutions that was offered up. Unfortunately, it kind of didn't go anywhere due to costs. But that was basically to put in like natural systems of cattails. And like if you've seen in any other drainage detention basin areas throughout Sacramento County or even El Dorado County, they build these dry basin areas that in wintertime they kind of fill up and all the cattails and the grasses catch and filter the materials that run through it. And then it has a spillway at the back end of it, so that cleaner waters flow back out to whatever the receiving water is. And in this case, the receiving water would be Laguna Joaquin. So there's options to potentially do that. There's always been, why can't you just raise the dam to deepen the lake? You can, but the only way you'll get water to collect for that is from runoff, from rainfall, or from over irrigation from the community. Due to the very, very minimal grade that exists within the CIA system, it just barely allows it to fill up to the spill. When the ditch is at, you know, this type of flow in it, when it's at maximum flow, it flows pretty well and fills into it. But I mean, at this point, raising the dam, maybe you could get like an inch or two out of the CIA, but that's about it from raising the dam. Otherwise, you have to capture it from runoff. And then scroll down further, Amelia, please. And then there was, again, an item that was discussed at our last ad hoc committee meeting, I think back in 2016-17, of using aqua shades, which are basically a dye that you put in there. They're a non-toxic, non-hazardous material that you put in there that just changes the color of the water, and it prevents sunlight from getting into it. And you can, you know, that can make it green or blue. And sometimes, you know, if you've seen in any other homeowner association areas, they do that type of thing to help the algae from growing in there. And then there was also discussion of changing the irrigation systems over there. So potentially we could hook up the RMA's irrigation system to pull out of the Chesbrough Reservoir, or to start utilizing recycled water or something like that as well. And then continued public education of people around Laguna Joaquin, including RMA, that they don't over-fertilize the grasses around there so that you don't have algae blooms as it relates to RMA's fertilizing activities. And then just the overall changing of the drainage system. So there's been talks there too, is, well, maybe you can just, we can just completely redo Laguna so that maybe like the top two arms are just catch basins and the bottom portion of the basin is just utilized for storage and irrigation. And then maybe turn some of the other areas into like park sites by backfilling them in. So there's a lot of ideas, but in general, most of it comes down to money in the past. And I've reached out to other organizations like the Murrieta Townhomes Inc., who represents the majority of the people impacted out there, have yet to have any financial help from that organization or suggestions as to what we can do other than spend more money ourselves on it. But we're working towards solutions. We're going to try to resolve this instead of just, you know, letting it pass through. We want to make this a long-term solution and deal with it and not have it be a constant headache for the residents that live around that area. So we're working on it for sure. Any questions?
Hands up.
I do have two hands up. Yes, thank you very much. I'm just going to start at the top of my list over here and unmute Mr. Public. Let me try and do this. Make hope chat. No. Lower hand. Can you hear us, Richard?
Yes, I unmuted myself.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Regarding the mid-flight treatment, I'm wondering where does this money come from and who's paying for it? Can somebody tell me that?
It comes from our drainage budget, and that's collected as a special tax from the community.
And at one of these meetings, Paul, I think you said something about you ate it, as if it wasn't coming out of that budget. Did I mishear that?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, but it is coming out of our drainage budget.
No. Okay, that's fine. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And then I have another hand raised. Mr. Sullivan, have you lowered your hand?
No, I didn't lower my hand.
Was it raised? Did I see that correctly?
Yes. Yes, it was.
You have the floor, sir.
I just, Paul, could you give us the label, whatever the brand or the generic is that they're using for the treatments currently?
Yes. Yeah. I have emailed that to you in the past. I will do that again after the meeting. It's Vectobac 12AS. It is a bacteriological product that is non-toxic to the environment and fish. What happens with this product is the midge flies larvae actually eat it, and it puts a crystal in their gut that keeps them from hatching into the flies. So that's how that functions. And it does have I believe it has an organic label certification on it. So.
Thank you.
I will send that to you.
This is Tom Hennig. I want to also mention there's conversation about utilizing the granular form of the treatment, or some people call it the pellets. And we discussed that very clearly with the folks from mosquito and vector control. And they said the liquid treatment, which happens to be a whole lot cheaper than the pellets, works a lot better when applied correctly. So I just want to make sure that message is clear and that it gets repeated whenever the question of the pellets or the granular solution comes up. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, they were actually mentioning the pellets can float on the surface and not get down to where they need to go. So, all right. Any further questions on that?
I had a question.
Paul,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I just wanted to find out if we're doing any treatment for algae.
As requested by the homeowners association around their irrigation system, we sometimes do spot treatments there because sometimes algae can start plugging up their irrigation system.
Okay, thanks.
But we hadn't done one in a while. And the big thing is why you can't just, put a whole bunch of copper sulfate down in the basin, if you recall, or you'll kill the fish. What it does is it drives all the oxygen out of the water, and kind of the multi-pronged issue over there is that you got people who want it for aesthetics, you got the RMA who wants it for irrigation, you got the ranch who wants it for potential irrigation, and then you got, a handful of people that want to use it for fishing. And so the fact that there's sport fish in there causes a major constraint for us for treatment options, as well as they eat mosquito fish that could potentially help eat the larvae here. So as I mentioned at our wastewater plants, we've got acres of ponds, and we don't have as much of an issue with midge flies as anywhere else does. And because we also have, I would say, hundreds of millions of mosquito fish in those basins as well. And because that's the only thing that's allowed to proliferate there. And that helps considerably with keeping the flies and the other vector issues down. So, all right. Any further questions?
I do have a hand raised. Mr. Public, I believe you'll be able to unmute yourself.
Yes. Just a note here. I read a couple of these memos, and it talks about the agreements between RMA and CSB in 1987 and another one, 94, something like that. And they talk about the agreements containing the water users at Laguna Joaquin would pay all RMCSD costs to maintain the water quality. I'd just like to note that I've seen those easement agreements, and I don't see anything at all about that. So I think that's a misstatement of the facts. I'm not sure it affects what we're talking about, but I mean, those agreements are very short, very easy to read. There's not a lot of legalese, but it does not address that issue at all. So just taking note of that fact.
Okay, so as it relates to those agreements as it, for the water basins there, it does note that, and what it in particular notes those the user for that area is the homeowners association. So the cost falls back to them. However, it was instead of just billing them for every bit of treatment and work that was done over there, prior GMs have decided that that was built into our raw water cost out of Laguna Joaquin, and that's where we were supposed to recoup our funds. And if you can recall that earlier this year, we were looking to update our raw water cost because that hadn't been updated in 20 to 30 years, that it wasn't keeping up with replacing our costs. So that's what one of the major reasons we were looking to update that cost, and we'll be looking to do so again in next spring with the Prop 218 noticing.
Was I looking at the wrong agreement? It says a 1987 agreement, and I... Yeah.
No, there are, yep, yeah, the 87 agreement was the original one, and then there's a subsequent agreement, like around 94, that is, you know, it basically just... just clarified a few more issues. Mainly that was in relation to recycled water that was now at that point available to the country club. But if you look at the very end of that agreement, there's a table and then there's some footnotes with that table to discuss costs. And so the 94 agreement is the, you know, it oversteps the 87.
Okay, maybe I missed that last part of the 94 agreement. Okay.
Yep. If you ever have any questions, feel free to call or email me and I can take you through.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Paul, in along those lines, in 2000, Ed Krause updated the charges to the RMA for using that irrigation water. And and so I have a couple questions about it. I guess maybe you answered part of it, that that's one of the reasons why we're doing the study on the raw water. Question number one is, whatever we come up with here, well, maybe this is more for Tom. Is the intent here to put the solution, the cost for the solution of this into our charges for raw water? But backing up before that, in his calculations, there's a statement that says something about including 650,000 cubic feet of free allowance for the RMA. And that's nowhere in the 94 agreements or anywhere. That just reading through these documents, that came out of nowhere at me. Do you happen to know the history of how all those charges came about?
I can. This is Tom Hennig. I can take a shot at it, and I'm sure that others can talk further about what I say. There's a comment in there that the RMA acquired a water right to utilize water going from the CIA ditch into Laguna Joaquin to irrigate what appeared to be the the acreage around the retention basin itself. And according to the information I have, that has morphed into irrigating up the parkway as well. We have meters that track the water that comes out of Laguna Joaquin for use by the RMA, and they get billed for that every month. I'm not really sure how that aligns with the raw water allowance, and if I'm not sure if we're monitoring where they are at each month or each year on the use of the water right versus overgoing, you know, exceeding what their water right allows. It's part of the whole phase of understanding how the whole CIA ditch program works and how the raw water is, how we collect revenue from the distribution of raw water. And it's pretty much next on the list of things to tackle here in district administration. So we have staff assigned to it. We have, we've received a bunch of information from Mr. Sullivan, and we're reviewing the water rights stuff as well as, you know, it might fit into the health of Laguna Joaquin as well. So I haven't spent a lot of time on this as of today, but we do have it on the list of priorities to tackle over the next couple months.
Well, just on the surface, after reading through this, I'm not following how come all of these costs aren't being put into the rate that RMA uses to irrigate, no matter how much water they use, whether it's up and down the parkway or it's just around the lake. If what they're paying is covering the costs, I think that was the intent of this. And then secondly, if one of the, and there's more than just the midge flies here, the latest thing that we got from the people that are upset about it is also has to do with the odors and the odor of the water that's being used to irrigate around there. And if we have some costs to improve that irrigation water so that it's not so that it's more in line with what people want, one would think that those costs would be charged to the customer that's using it. Does that make sense?
Yes, if we can do a direct one-to-one cost we charge that recovers costs, we will try to do that. And that's part of the overriding need that we have to go through, because the people who built all these agreements in 1994 and 1987 and 2000, the information is not readily available other than the formal documents. And sometimes the intent of the documents is not real clear. In my opinion, you know, I would expect the user of the water to pay for the cost of managing the water. What that means as far as the odor of the Laguna Joaquin, which is, again, it's a detention basin that is in a very key location for aesthetics of the entire district. I don't know what that means right away. And there's a lot of other conversations going on related to Laguna Joaquin, and I'm trying to track all of them at the same time so we can come up with a proper decision or recommendation to the board. By the time, you know, February, March roll around, when the midge fly is not a problem, you know, we go into the process where we're issuing our Prop 218 notices. And by then we should have a lot more information on how the water is used and who's using it and what options we have for recovering our costs.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's not only a drainage, it's not just a drainage basin that we're pulling money out of the drainage budget for. It's also a reservoir that's being used by the RMA to pull out raw water. So we need to keep that in mind going forward, that we have a customer that's using that water. And if we have any cost to keep it at the quality that they need, I think we need to keep in mind that that there's a customer there that's paying for that use. Just to wrap this up, I think what you said was that that we're still in the process of gathering information to do the raw water study, and are we close to putting numbers on paper, or are we still thinking about it?
If I may, this is Paul. So one of the big things I needed to do subsequent to when we were looking to adopt what information we had in place, the Cosumnes Irrigation Association wanted to have further discussions as it related to costs of conveyance through the CIA. They wanted to recoup costs as well. And so we had I need to schedule a meeting and with them and Tom to further discuss that. So, and I believe Mr. Sullivan has his hand up.
Go ahead, John.
Yes, thank you. I was just wondering, Tom, if you had gotten a call back from Matt Hedges on this matter yet.
I did. He gave me a contact over at the landfill. You have to return back, but I'll follow up.
Okay, Randy, we've got a number of conversations going on that, you know, maybe a whole lot bigger picture thing, but it may not be a financially catastrophic number for the community if we can figure out how to get some cooperation from Sacramento County and other agencies. As Paul said, the stuff coming off the bottom of the Laguna Joaquin is toxic, but there's a provision that just got adopted that allows it to be daily cover at the landfill. So we were talking about a potentiality around Robin with the dump to take the bottom of the pond and deliver it to the county for daily cover. And if we get rid of all the mud and it goes to the landfill and not to some other place where midge flies are going to propagate, and maybe the midge flies aren't there anymore because there's no mud at the bottom of the lake. So that's the conversation that we're trying to have. If we can get them to pay for daily cover at a reasonable rate, there may be some way to make the budgets all mesh up together. So we're talking about a whole bunch of things we've never talked about before. Any idea right now is a good idea until we come up with a better solution. We are able, the way we're running, because the ditch is much more efficient right now, we're able to run much more water into Laguna Joaquin because the ditch is much more efficient than it used to be this time of the year. It used to take us a day and a half, Paul, right, to run water from the dam down to the ranch. Now it gets there in about 5 hours. So the ditch is not, has not been slowed down, and that's a good thing at this time of the year for everybody.
So are we just filling Laguna Joaquin, or is there water coming over the spillway?
It's going.
There was water coming out there for a few days, but it's not now.
Okay. Well, that's got to help, and if the county will take the muck off of this, I was just looking at did some numbers on the back of my hand here as far as the yards coming out of there and the trucking. It's a big,
massive.
It's a big number, but if we can get somebody else to pay for it, that would be great. So Paul, you're having conversations. That's where we need to leave it. You're having conversations with the county about this possibility.
Yeah, Tom is on behalf of the district. I'm looking into getting dredging costs and the monitoring solution.
Paul, there's one other number that you need, and that is the once the muck comes off the bottom, it's probably 2% solids and 98% water. So it needs to go into a separation tank, and they make those and rent those. They're expensive, but if we're talking about a multi-year project, you got to have that to thicken it up to then truck it to the landfill. So that dewatering truck needs to be somewhere where we pump into it and then we bag out of it with geotech bags. That's what we've been talking to the experts about, that muck stuff all the time off of ponds. 25 acres is a big pond.
Oh, it's so, it's very big, yeah.
So it's probably a four-year project. And Randy, like you say, it's probably, you know, 33,000 loads of muck every year. And that's a lot of trucking. So you gotta make sure somebody's paying for that trucking on the other end.
we're getting way
ahead of ourselves here. We'll leave it with Tom is having discussions with them, and we'll report back on what he finds out about their thoughts about taking this at the landfill. Anything further on Laguna Joaquin Basin update? Okay, let's move on to update on encroachment agreement. Is that a coastline item?
No, we're going to handle that that item as well. So Amelia took the ball with that. Amelia, if I speak out of turn, jump in. So this is in relation to one of the monument signs for the Murrieta Marketplace that went over the CIA easement. And so we just wanted to make sure that that was documented correctly related to the CIA, as the district is responsible for operation and maintenance of the CIA. And so in going back and forth between the developer on the project and our engineers at Coastland, they came up with this agreement and this encroachment agreement, and finally it's ready for signatures in here in the packet.
Any questions on the monument sign encroachment agreement?
I had a question. There's a figure A in there that shows the big sign next to the highway. And you're telling us that the sign's on top of the easement, but that little figure A doesn't really show that.
It's not, I wouldn't say directly on top of it. It's kind of off to the side a little bit. But it's in an area.
Oh, go ahead.
It's in an area where piping exists underground, and should the CIA ever have to get in there and start digging to get access, was kind of a concern.
I was thinking about the next page down.
Okay, here we go. This
one? Where it says A. So I see the monument sign, and I see the easement, and they don't overlap.
That is correct. They don't overlap.
Oh, so it's just in case you have to dig. Okay. Because maybe the footing overlaps. I don't know. So that's just in case somebody has to disturb the ground to maintain the sign. Yeah.
Mark, this agreement has to do with the B location.
It does?
Oh. It's not the A location. Yeah. That one there. Which is right behind the car wash and the new driveway in between the Starbucks.
Okay. Then I read it wrong. Okay.
Well, that's a 40-foot easement there, and the sign is sitting over the entire, you know, inside the easement, and that's that 36-inch siphon that goes underneath Murrieta Drive. Okay. It goes in behind the fire station, all underground from there. So that sign is up top, and it's got a 4-foot footing underneath it, and we calculated it's about 16 feet down to the 36-inch siphon pipe. So it's quite separated, but it's in the easement. That's why we wanted, the district wanted to make sure there was some coverage for them in case they had to knock over the sign to do a CIA repair.
Okay. Nope.
Okay, Martin, the action item here is to move this to the board meeting of September 16th for approval. I don't have a problem with that. Are you okay?
I'm in agreement to send it forward.
All right. So move, so done. So it's, that's what we'll do. next agenda item is the pedestrian bridge parcel conveyance update.
Yes, so I'm going to handle this for Coastland. Coastland's been taking the ball on this one, picking it up for Mark Martin. This was one of his items he had brought up. So the wooden pedestrian bridge that runs from the south over to Unit 6, as part of work to get that bridge done in the past, the parcel, for whatever reason, was conveyed to the district. I don't recall the exact reasonings as to why, but at some point it was, you know, within that conveyance of the parcel, at some point it was supposed to be turned back over to the RMA and had not been done. And so this was just to clean up that project and give that parcel back to the RMA. So all this work in relation to it is basically to define the parcel. So the title company was brought in to do so and listed out where the project is. And this is basically to take it forward back to the RMA with our board's approval for the RMA to accept that parcel back. Kind of the long and the short of it. And all the legalese and whatnot's there in the packet for you to read at your leisure.
So is this ready for approval? It's the agenda item says update. Or is this to be moved to the board for some purpose? Or where are we at here?
Yeah, I believe it's to go back to the board. So the board can give us direction. It has to appoint Tom as the real property negotiator. And then once you do that, once the board approves Tom as the real property negotiator, then we can just handle that internally and deal directly with the RMA for conveyance of this.
Any problems with that, Martin?
I thought I saw in the letter from Coastland, it said something to the effect that needs some action items on a CIA easement. Is that going to be part of this handing over to Tom?
Yeah, Martin, this is Tom. The CIA has an interest in this in that the northern part of the bridge, as it comes off or goes on north or south, there's a CIA box there of some sort, and there needs to be a condition attached to it that, you know, the easements are covered and both parties are represented correctly. I see John has his hand up, so I'll let John spell it out.
John?
Okay. I had asked Lori regarding the title report to make sure that the ditch information is correct. And I was, again, I'm always reminded that there are a lot of documents out there. And on the title report, she indicates that the title report does not have any reference to CIA. But if you click on, if you go to the title report and you scroll down, can we find that item 15 on the title report? Everybody will be able to look at it this way. If you go to 15 on the title report, after you get past the power and all that, whoa, right there. Click on the 106261 at the bottom. Right there, yes. Click on that and up will come a document, hopefully. Will up come a county document. Yes, you want to get that. This is a grant deed. This is a grant deed. Goes back to the beginning of Rancho Murrieta at the time. pension trust fund formed Rancho Murrieta Properties, Inc. So the corporate co-custodian of pension trust fund for operating engineers, Bank of America, represented the pension trust fund's interests in Rancho Murrieta, always did, and then it became other banks over time. But they were in this document, which goes back to 1973, recorded, all of the water rights that OE3 had to be dispersed over time. And what you see here on Exhibit A is that the co-custodian grants to Rancho Murrieta Property, go back and you're going to need to look at this document because here's the answer. Accepting, you know, all these parcels are covered, which if you look at the big parcel map of Rancho Murrieta back in 73, you know, there's not very many parcels. And so all those parcels except 6 and 7 and 8 are mentioned, and those are on the south of the highway. So what you have here is an accepting from a portion of parcel 2, here's your water right that you're talking about. So together with all riparian and appropriative water rights, privileges appurtenant to or a part of the parcels hereby conveyed, and similarly saving and reserving all riparian and appropriative rights and privileges of other lands of the grantor, which is the PTF, not conveyed here, it being the mutual intent of the parties that no existing riparian rights or privileges of any of said lands in and to the Cosumnes River lands being severed or otherwise lost or impaired by this conveyance, and that all of the same continue to exist as fully as if they were on the parcels that they started with. So this is the legal language that says, hey, we're moving these water rights around, and this talks about Laguna Joaquin. So it basically tells you how the water right got, the PTF applied for all these water rights, and they are listed here that deal with Laguna Joaquin and how water goes in and out, and that the CIA can repair the canal, operate it, improve it, move it, do anything they want. And then here's the easements, and there's a couple of easements here that are kind of crucial. So if you're going to scroll down a little bit further, you'll see that there's a couple of easements that deal with the Laguna Joaquin assets and the original 73 PD. So again, once in a while, these gems show up at the weirdest times. But somebody asked earlier, you know, what was the method by which water gets into Laguna Joaquin? Well, when it was built, you know, they're saying 70, it took them 3 years to get the water rights, and then they passed them on from PTF to RMPI, and then those are conveyed, you know, and confirmed from the CIA being a partnership of the landowners. So it's kind of complicated, but there's your base document on how the ditch worked with Laguna Joaquin, okay? And that's just, and so I'm satisfied that we don't have to worry about, you know, any issue, except that if we need to knock the bottom of that culvert out, there's a culvert in the foundation of the north abutment that is on the bridge. That CIA pipe that goes through there, which is, you know, it's a 40-foot easement, and that's just a piece of pipe, I think 36 inches, maybe it's 42, going through there. It's a little higher than it needs to be at this time of the year. You know, meaning if we ever get into a desperate water year, we may want to knock the bottom of that thing down about 6 inches so the water gets to the people who need it at Laguna Joaquin and downstream. So we're satisfied. How you deal with the RMA is of no concern of ours, but if you need us to be in the middle because we own all of the property around it through Murrieta Club Properties, we're, you know, we're amenable to changing what the description of the property that's conveyed is. And if RMA is comfortable with how it is and CSD is comfortable with what they're going to give them, then we're not concerned. Our water rights are all described in the title report and we're fine.
Okay. So back to the question, Martin, are you okay with moving this on to the board?
Yeah, then I'm in agreement with it.
Okay, so am I.
I'm with you.
That item will show up on the agenda for the next board meeting. Next item on the agenda is stimulus project update. Paul?
Yeah, so this is verbal because there's basically no update. So reaching out to the Regional Water Authority, who was going to help administer this information that went back to a local legislator. Basically, long and short from getting all the information back is that Congress has been in gridlock trying to make decisions with a stimulus plan, let alone any infrastructure plan. So it has gone nowhere, unfortunately. But it's all in a queue. They've developed a website that marks out all these projects in the Sacramento region. And our projects are listed there as well. So once something actually starts to happen, I will share that with the board.
Thank you, Paul. Next item on the agenda is director and staff comments. Let's start with staff. Any comments, suggestions, questions?
This is Paul. So just some comments to bring forward. So we're always terribly busy this time of year as it relates to recycled water, water drainage use, etc. However, one of the things we want to plan for is upcoming this winter, we are seeing that we're going to have a lot of maintenance to do at our wastewater treatment facility. In operating the facility this summer, we thought we'd had everything in place so that we wouldn't have issues. And we're finding that there's a lot of corrosion and items breaking that just aren't visibly, you know, you can't really see until you start digging or getting to them. And so our DAFs, which are dissolved air flotation structures, even though I had done a painting project or a coating project on there to rehabilitate some of the steel and then coat that several years ago. That's actually getting close to 10 years now. We have a lot of corrosion going on over there. The issue being is that when you have dissolved air, a lot of the oxygen in the water, plus the addition of chlorine in it, becomes very corrosive condition. And that those tanks are starting to see a lot of that corrosion. And we're going to need to deal with it. So we know we have a whole section within our East DAF, which is our newer DAF unit, that needs to get replaced. And at this point, we just have a major we may have a major project upon us if we start uncovering more issues. And I just wanted to bring that up.
Thanks, Paul. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Tom. Paul's staff are working on some pretty critical areas of drainage within some of the neighborhoods out behind the gates. And what we're finding is that every time we go up there with a piece of equipment to dredge out a drain so the drainage can come properly down a little channel versus spread out over a huge meadow, that there's a lot of standing water. And, you know, just to let you know, we're putting tags on people's houses asking them to step back on their watering routine, because this time of year is when we want some of those drainage areas to be dry so we can go in and rehab the actual flow area of the drains instead of creating these big meadows. And we're actively doing that on a couple spots in the district right now. And hopefully, you know, we can have success in getting those areas dried out so we can dig them out correctly. I just wanted to put that out there and make a quick statement. So that's it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Martin, anything?
Yeah, I had a question, I guess, for Tom. Have we made any response back to the petitioners who gave us all those petitions last month?
I have not contacted anyone particularly. You're thinking about the four people who signed the top of the petition?
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know, after you devise a game plan of how you're going to handle this, you might just give them a note as to what your game plan is.
Okay.
It seems they went to all that trouble getting all these people to sign a petition. It'd be nice if they got a response.
And I will do that. We've made a number of steps forward, and we've done some things proactively, and we're looking into other options. So I'll definitely contact. I think there's one primary person on that, Marty.
Is it Jane Hall? Is that who it was? Or is it Bobby Fite? But you could find it, I'm sure.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you.
It's a great suggestion.
Yep.
I guess my only comment would be, after listening to Paul's horror stories about what we may be looking at as far as replacement stuff, brings out again how important getting going on our reserve study is, so that we know where we stand as far as having the finances to handle something that can pop up on us at any time like this. So that having been said, I think we're done this morning. Thanks to everyone for joining us, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.